Detroit today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Stephen Henderson. The question of the debt limit has been on the mind of many in America today as we approach and have surpassed the need to raise that number. With the risk of default on the horizon, many Americans are wondering, to raise the debt limit, to not raise the debt limit. That's the prevailing question. But both Republicans and Democrats acknowledge that if the debt limit is not raised, it will have severe consequences for our economy. They just disagree about what needs to be done before raising it. Many Republicans say that American spending has been too risky and that Congress needs to find ways to cut our spending habits before raising the debt limit. Many Democrats don't believe this is true, and they think that if the debt limit isn't raised, it will unleash havoc on our economy. So what should they do? How often have we been in this place of potentially defaulting on our debt? And what would defaulting mean for us now? And broadly, how should we be thinking about this entire scenario? To talk about this, we have Wendy Edelberg here with us. Wendy is the director of the Hamilton Project and a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institute. She previously served as the chief economist at the Congressional Budget Office also, and we always appreciate her insight on the show. Wendy, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Very happy to be here.
Well, let's just start off with the basics. We've been over it before, but sometimes we can forget or get confused. What is the debt ceiling? How does it work? What does it mean for us generally?
Yeah, great question, because it's something that we shouldn't have to worry about. So the fact that it's, you know, new to people is, you know, means that this isn't, you know, this is something that has just been pro forma in the past. So let's start with the basic point that because of laws on the books, because of things that the federal government has done on the, you know, to benefit U.S. taxpayers in the past, U.S. taxpayers owe people money. We owe interest to those who have lent to the U.S. by purchasing treasuries. We owe doctors and hospitals who have treated Medicare and Medicaid patients. We owe federal workers who have done work on our behalf or owed paychecks. And the federal government owes people who are entitled to benefits, such as Social Security. And day in and day out, Treasury makes those payments, and it makes them out of a checking account that is filled up with money from revenues that come in when we pay our taxes. And when that's not enough, what Treasury will do is it will expand the amount of federal debt that's out there. It will borrow from people, and that will help make up the deficit to help it pay its bills. And since January, Treasury has not been allowed to increase the total amount of federal debt that's out there, but it's been able to pay its bills even though revenues haven't been enough by moving some money around. The term is called extraordinary measures. But what's going to happen, perhaps as early as June, is that Treasury will run out of its ability to move money around, and the debt ceiling will bind, and there simply won't be enough money in Treasury's bank account to pay all the bills that are owed because of past things that Congress has decided that Treasury should pay for.
So if we have a situation now where we have this debt ceiling and Congress has already allotted money to be spent, but also has a limit on how much debt we can have, why was the debt ceiling even created in the first place? It would seem to run against the idea that, hey, we've made obligations. How can you make obligations that you won't guarantee as a government you'll pay for in the future?
Yeah, there are basically three things that are on the books and that are in law. There are laws that determine federal spending and revenues. There's something in the Constitution that says to Treasury that it has to pay the debt and it's not allowed to default. And then we have a third thing of the debt ceiling that says, no, you're not allowed to borrow more if you hit the debt ceiling and we haven't raised it. And in essence, those three things are incompatible. There's some historical reasons why we have a debt ceiling that are sort of interesting. It used to be that, like in the, you know, the 1800s and the very early 1900s, that every time treasury, so the way the Constitution's written, it kind of sounds like the ability to borrow is held with Congress. And so Congress was essentially directing Treasury to borrow on behalf of Congress. And so every time Treasury went out and increased the amount of federal debt that was out there, it had to get permission from Congress. And this was, you know, this was a clunky system. And so in the early 1900s, Congress said, let's just be more efficient about this. And we're going to say, you're allowed to borrow up until this really high amount. Just stop coming back to us and asking us each time. And that basically worked in a pro forma way. And then there were about 20 years there where we had particularly good policy, where there was a rule on the books called the Gephardt Rule that said, you know what, if Congress passes spending and revenue policy and that requires Treasury to borrow to pay the bills, they're just allowed to do that. But then, you know, Congress decided it didn't like that rule. And so it went into the days of, you know, the past several decades where this has become a fight. It's a time when the policy out, the party out of power feels like it has a little bit of leverage. And so it's been a time for negotiations. But what's happening now is a lot more frightening to me than the negotiations in previous decades.
Yeah, it would seem like that, because we have now a situation where I'm seeing folks going far more up to that deadline. I mean, we've seen it once before in the past, I remember about a decade ago. But while we've seen Republicans do that recently in times, is there any history of Democrats in the past using the debt ceiling or the debt limit for negotiations as well?
They have absolutely. The Democrats have, when the Democrats have been, you know, in the minority, they have definitely used it as leverage. This has been a bipartisan thing. You know, more to look, if you want us to help you do this, you're going to have to give us something. Otherwise, you guys are on your own. The negotiations have more taken on that flavor. What's more worrying to me this time around, it's not just that the Republicans are playing such hardball. Like that's kind of run-of-the-mill politics. It's that there are a bunch of, in this case, Republicans, who seem to have already, like, they're gunning for the debt ceiling to bind.
Yeah.
They have already prepared their talking points for after the debt ceiling binds, and, you know, we haven't talked about what happens when it does indeed bind, but it'll be bad. And they have already prepared their talking points for when that eventuality comes, which suggests to me, like, for at least some people in Washington, D.C., working on behalf of U.S. taxpayers, like, this is the outcome
right.
that they are gunning for. And that's alarming.
Yeah, it's one thing to use brinksmanship for negotiation. It's another thing to think that's a desired outcome, which would put us in a little bit of rarefied space right now as we are speaking with Wendy Edelberg here on 101.9 WDET in Detroit today. She's the director of the Hamilton Project and a senior fellow in economic studies at the Brookings Institute. But we also want to speak with you, as I know this issue doesn't come up that often. It can be fairly complex, but it can also have tremendous ramifications for us. That's why we want to know from you listening right now. What do you make of the fights over the debt ceiling? Do you think we should raise the debt limit? And what do you think are the consequences of not doing so? And do you think Republicans are right that Democrats have been irresponsibly spending and need to restructure things around their spending before we raise the debt limit? Or should the debt limit just be off the table for negotiations in the first place? I mean, as Wendy will tell you, they're two separate things. The debt limit on what we have already spent, just being able to cover our bills, versus future spending, which is something totally separate. But we'd want to hear from you. Give us a call, 313-577-1019. Again, 313-577-1019. I want to get into calls right now as we have Brian in Ypsilanti. Brian, go ahead. You're on Detroit Today.
Oh, hey, thank you. I've got two quick questions, which I'll ask, and then I'll take the answers off the air. So the first one is this just a U.S. problem? In other words, like, do other countries owe us money? Have they ever defaulted on their payments? What is the impact on our economy when that happens? And two is, when we've had periods of surplus, like in the Clinton era, where we supposedly had this big surplus and we balanced our budget, did we use any of that surplus to, pay down our obligations, or did we just use that for other things and still rack up more debt?
Too fast. No, Brian, thank you so much. Those are two fascinating questions, and I present them to you, Wendy.
There have certainly been other countries that have defaulted on their debt, but we're talking about, countries in South America come to mind. It's pretty common, but these are not countries that we really want to be on that list. If Treasury were to actually get to the point where it truly couldn't make principal and interest payments, and there was no way to interpret what they were doing other than defaulting on Treasury securities, that would be cataclysmic for U.S. financial markets, for global financial markets. I think it would pretty fundamentally change the role that U.S. Treasuries play in the global financial system. I mean, the Treasury securities are arguably the most important financial instrument in the entire global financial system. And the U.S. government, or we as taxpayers, we as people living in the United States, we get a massive benefit from the fact that everybody wants to lend to us and everybody wants to hold dollars. If we were to actually default and not make a principal and interest payment and, look like basically a rogue nation, that would change. And we would take a massive financial hit from that, to say nothing for the fact of what it would do to the economy in the near term, what it would do to the global system in the near term. Yes, other countries have done this, not countries that we want to be associated with on this front. What was the other question?
The other question was about the Clinton surplus that we had during that time.
Yeah, that's right. So yes, absolutely. I mean, there was a brief time when we were, economists and, people in looking at financial markets were contemplating what happens when the stock of treasuries gets smaller and smaller out there. Because, as I said, treasury securities are a really important part. They are the grease in the global financial, in the wheels of the global financial system. So there was a time when we were actually doing some hand-wringing of what happens when Treasury just stops issuing Treasury securities, or increasing the supply of them. So, yeah, that was definitely, it looked like it was in the cards. And then we decided to go a different direction with, tax cuts and increases in spending and, and various other unexpected things that happened to the U.S. economy that then led to where we are today, which is a moderately sized deficit, and we are spending in excess of our revenues, which, let me just throw a flag out and say, spending more than our revenues and having a deficit, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with that for a lot of reasons. But that is most assuredly the position that we're in, and it requires an increase in federal borrowing year after year.
All right. And when we return with you, Wendy, we're going to take a look at possible solutions that the sides could have, why they're having such an issue, Democrats and Republicans in the House, and just raising the debt limit, and what the default might look like for us here in Detroit and in the country if we don't step off the gas and raise that debt ceiling. We'll continue with you on Detroit Today in just a moment here on 101.9 WDET.
WDET provides trusted news, inclusive conversations, and cultural experiences that empower the community. 101.9 WDET, Detroit's public radio station.
Hey Against Detroit today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Nick Austin, filling in for Steven Henderson, and we're speaking about the debt ceiling with Wendy Edelberg, the director of the Hamilton Project and a senior fellow in economic studies and one of my favorite people to talk about issues of budgeting, Congressional Budget Office, as well as the economy. We're also talking to you about the debt ceiling, and you can get involved with the conversation. 313-577-1019. Again, it's 313-577-1019. Before we get to calls and more questions, we do have some comments from Twitter, including Dragon Lady RN, a nurse. Republicans only conveniently care about spending when Democrats are in power. Ironic, because Dems have a record of reducing the deficit. It's 100% Mitch McConnell weaponization of legislative protocol, brinksmanship, holding everyone hostage. Very interesting point there, as Mitch McConnell has used legislative protocol, and maybe his friends over in the congressional side in the House are also using that now to their advantage. Moving on to Freedom to Be on Twitter, abolish debt limits. I'm tired of Republicans damaging our economy by playing roulette with our good faith and credit. A note that it was their unfunded spending, especially on tax breaks for the rich, that added the most to the debt. So I give that question to you, Wendy, as we talk about this. What would it take to just eliminate and abolish debt limits? What would it take for Congress to do that?
Oh, it would be as simple as passing a law. One thing that we haven't talked about is what actually would happen on this day when Treasury doesn't have enough money in the bank account to pay an entire day's worth of bills. So I want to make this concrete.
Please.
For the listeners.
Yes.
So that it doesn't just sound, I don't know, so it doesn't sound so esoteric. So the short answer is we don't really know, because Treasury has never been in this position. But what's widely expected is that if they didn't have enough money in the bank account, and you really should think of it as a bank account, to make all of, let's say, Tuesday's payments, they would make principal and interest payments so that they wouldn't strictly be in default on U.S. Treasuries, because that's a really bad outcome for the financial markets. But we'll come back to financial markets in a second. And so what they would do is make those principal and interest payments, but then they would delay all the non-interest payments that they had to make on that Tuesday until they accumulated a lot more money in that checking account. So maybe Tuesday's non-interest payments would get paid on Thursday or Friday or the following Monday or maybe the following Thursday, because they would always want to make sure that they had enough money to make principal and interest. But they would then not try to prioritize between one non-interest payment and another non-interest payment, and they would make that whole day's bucket of payments when they accumulated enough money. And the way people would then experience that is that if you were expecting a check from the federal government because you had done work for them as a federal contractor, you would have been a doctor who treated Medicaid patients, what's now a lot discussed in the news is if you're a Social Security recipient and you have automatic deposits into your account from the Social Security system that always come on a date certain, those payments would not come as scheduled. And in fact, you wouldn't know when those payments were coming. And when all said and done, what would really happen overall is that in order to make principal and interest payments on time, Treasury would have to cut its other payments that it makes by about a third, maybe even a little over a third. And so this has real consequences, but in terms of people seeing delays in the amount of money that they get from the federal government that they, shock of all shocks, fully expected to get on time. But it's not like when somebody holding a Treasury security says, well, I got my principal and interest on time, so it's all good to me. It's not like they don't notice what's happening in these other payments. And I would expect the first day this happens for not just the stock market to fall in a really frightening way, but also disruptions in the financial system that are really frightening. And when those sorts of things happen, you know, firms, including firms in Detroit, say, you know, hey, this week we were gonna do that big bond issuance and fund that big project. You know what? Let's wait a week and see how this resolves. Let's not do. You know what? We were actually gonna break ground on that big building. You know what? Let's wait. Hey, you know, we were gonna post those 1,000 jobs to add another shift. You know, let's wait.
Yeah.
And all that stuff has cascading effects. And so I think we would see pretty quick economic effects, not just from the financial system, but from a loss of confidence.
Yeah. You know, you talk about the financial market impact, but what I'm also hearing from you is if you're someone who contracts with the government, a doctor or just a standard worker, and you're not receiving your payment on time, you lose confidence in knowing when you're going to receive your paycheck. You're maybe a little tighter with your wallet, or if you're someone who lives paycheck to paycheck, you're not even able to make that payment. That could have a cascading effect on the economy as well. What type of impact would that have for workers who are far more concerned and have far less flexibility with their budgets if we aren't raising this debt ceiling?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, where this is possibly going to show up most quickly is not necessarily for federal workers or federal contractors, but for Social Security recipients and other recipients who have organized their lives around these automatic deposits coming into their account on exact days over the course of the month. And like they, you know, they may be quite dependent on that money coming in, and rightly so. Why wouldn't they expect the federal government to make good? And so we're talking about that money not coming into their account. And then, you know, the landlord comes and says, it's the fifth of the month. I want my rent.
Right.
And the landlord's just going to say, no problem. You wait until the federal government decides to pay you.
Right. Such a cascading effect these decisions have on all of us. As we move back to the phones right now, Raj in Ypsilanti. Go ahead. You're on Detroit Today. Raj, are you there? It's Detroit Today, 101.9 WDET. Yes. Go ahead, Raj.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. Just zooming out, just wanted to understand when we issue, say, more debt, when you take more debt by raising a debt ceiling, who all will own the debt, right? Who is the Treasury borrowing from? Is it just the Federal Reserve, or is it anyone who borrows the securities? And the second part is, do we pay more in interest on those than what we are growing at, which means maybe the GDP is growing at a lesser pace than what we are paying out on that loan? And is that the case, and should it be the case?
Go ahead, Wendy.
Oh, so many good questions there. So Treasury securities, it's a really big market, and foreign investors and sovereign funds in foreign countries own about a quarter of U.S. debt. Which is to say that about 75% of U.S. debt is held domestically. And it's going to be held by, you know, investors. It's going to be held by big financial institutions. But we all probably are, you know, nearly all of the listeners probably own U.S. treasuries directly or indirectly, even if they don't know it. So if you've deposited money in a bank account and your bank is paying you interest, you know, it might be really low interest, but nonetheless, one of the ways that the bank is making money to be able to pay you a little bit of interest on your deposit is they're investing your money. And one of the most basic places that the bank is investing that money is in treasuries. And for sure, if you have a 401k, If you work for a firm that has promised you a pension, you know, they've had to save money, and that's probably invested in U.S. treasuries. So ownership of treasuries is far and wide. And, you know, the interest rate on U.S. treasuries has been coming down for decades. It has certainly come up in the past couple of years. It's absolutely right that economists watching this market pay very close attention to interest rates on treasuries relative to the growth rate in the economy, because we're trying to see, you know, how stable things are going forward, and, you know, whether or not fiscal policy, if it were just set on basically autopilot, would have ramifications going forward. But the reason that I think we should set that aside is because that's about the future. Those are hard questions. I have lots of ideas for future fiscal policy. You know, if I get to hold the magic wand, but what the current conversation is about is not what we should do about the future. It's about, do we pay the bills that we've already incurred?
Right. And that's the big issue that I think a lot of us are having here right now, Wendy, is that we know the Republicans control Congress. Republicans in Congress have the strength, the power, the majority of Congress is all is needed to raise the debt limit. And we know that there's
the House.
Yeah. Right. And we know also that there's a contingent that you mentioned in the House that is just against it, seems to maybe want to go off the cliff. So with polarization like that happening, where you just have such a group, first of all, do Republicans without that set that you mentioned have enough that they could just get it done if they got off of this desire to deal with future spending? Do they have the votes without that contingent that wants to go off the cliff? Could they bring in Democrats? What is a solution that could get us out of this, first of all? Can we do it just through Congress or the House of Republicans? Go ahead.
You know, so I'm not, this is, you know, at the edge of my expertise,
right,
because this is really about the politics of it all. But the fundamental issue here is the way the House Republicans have organized themselves around Speaker McCarthy's leadership. And he essentially needs to keep, you know, the support of nearly all the Republicans in Congress to keep his speakership. And
yeah.
So it is, you know, widely assumed, I've certainly said out loud and not been told that I'm wrong, that if McCarthy said, you know what, I'm going to ignore the Republicans in the House who actually really want to let the debt ceiling bind, or, you know, and I should say they have voted for and passed in the House a bill that would have pretty draconian cuts and in return postpone the debt ceiling, basically put off this day of reckoning for about a year. So they are on record with at least something that raises the debt ceiling. But it's very, very far from what the Democrats would accept. The common thinking is that if McCarthy were to say, you know what, let's just raise the debt ceiling, he would lose his speakership.
Right. And so with that concern, there may be other ways out of this that McCarthy probably doesn't even want to admit to. So let's get back to the economics of this. One of the things that you mentioned earlier in the show was how the debt ceiling may be in conflict with other aspects of what's required for spending and making sure we pay our debts. But you mentioned that the Constitution requires America to pay off of all of its debts. One of the reasons we're in this situation. It would seem then, conflict of laws, you're not a lawyer, that maybe that could control, and I know people have talked about other potential options for getting rid of this problem, the $1 trillion coin, for example, and all of these high-minded ideas.
Yep.
What are solutions that could be out there? Because even the Biden administration has signaled maybe they're looking at some other things. What are other solutions out there that you're aware of, have thought of, that maybe could sidestep Congress and get this issue resolved?
There are a bunch of workarounds, and it's great fun as an economist to think through those workarounds and how they can be made to work, and, you know, the $1 trillion coin, and how would the Fed has straightforward ways of keeping inflation, you know, without, like, keeping that money from going into the economy in worrying ways. Like, all these workarounds are really fun to talk about, but they won't work. And here's why. Let's talk about the simplest one, because they all basically have this kind of problem. Let's talk about the simplest one, where Treasury says, you know what, the Constitution tells us we have to pay our bills, and so we're going to ignore the debt ceiling, and we're going to issue new Treasury securities to raise the amount of federal debt out there. We're just going to decide that we can do that and let them sue. Okay, well, first of all, they will sue.
Right.
But second of all, buy those Treasury securities in those days when there are lawsuits raging and there are lots of people out there saying the U.S. Treasury is illegally issuing Treasury securities that it has no standing to issue. Like, that is not going to calm financial markets. Mm-hmm. That's going to massively confuse financial markets. And then is the idea that the U.S. Treasury is just supposed to ignore the debt ceiling forevermore while some parts of Congress continue to say forevermore that the U.S. Treasury is doing something illegal? And as this works its way through the courts, like, this is not a sustainable, stable solution. So I'm actually, it's my view that if the U.S. Treasury were to do this and just go out there and say, we're off the reservation and we are going to issue U.S. Treasury securities, even though there's going to be a whole lot of people in America who think that it's illegal for us to be doing this. My intuition is that would have the exact same effect on financial markets and the economy more broadly as if the U.S. Treasury made principal and interest payments and just postponed payments to federal workers, Social Security beneficiaries, doctors and hospitals, and the like.
Yeah.
So the solution to the problem is solving the problem. The problem is the problem.
Right.
And the workarounds just create chaos in a different, it's just a different flavor of chaos.
You know, Wendy, I know I have to let you go, and I'm going to, but it's interesting that you said that because so much of this seems psychological. We're talking about what markets are going to do. So it's assuaging these markets' concern, and we're coming up on an election. So theoretically, if you could just get over to that next election and maybe get some more sensible people in the House of Representatives that could fix this issue, that would be sufficient. But it's a very risky way of going. I guess the concern here is just allaying the psychological concerns of the market. And the best way to do that would be raising the debt ceiling.
Yes, but just to make people understand that this isn't like a psychological reaction that like people can't relate to.
Right.
You know, anybody out there who's listening who earns a wage and gets paid on time by an employer, I want you to imagine your employer saying to you, not only am I not paying you when I said I would, not sure when I will pay you.
Hmm.
Wouldn't you have a different feeling about your employer if that happened? Like, it's not this reaction, you know, we're talking about financial markets and like it's confusing to think about what that would be, what that means. But like, that's a pretty human reaction that we're just talking, that I think I just described.
I think you did too, Wendy, and I guess we're going to have to end it there. But I thank you so much, Wendy Edelberg, Director of the Hamilton Project, Senior Fellow of Economic Studies at the Brookings Institute. Always a pleasure to speak with you.
Excellent. Good to talk to you too.
When we return here on Detroit Today, a new bill involving distracted driving has finally passed through the Michigan Senate. But will it make its way to the governor's desk? And what will that mean for all of us here? We're going to speak with Colin Jackson, Capitol reporter of the Michigan Public Radio Network, when we return on Detroit Today.